All right, where's my money? What? Chintzy College Station.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. Like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
I go out walking after midnight out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight searching for you. I stop to see a weeping willow crying on his pillow. Maybe he's crying.
If taken by someone they weren't prescribed for. Harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet. Or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community, at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
From school about the incident today.
Scary.
You know, teachers like me, parents, we don't always know as much as you guys do about what's going on with other kids.
Half the time, it's rumors.
Yeah, but if you're ever concerned about a friend who's having trouble with alcohol, prescription drugs, anything, you need to tell an adult, someone you know and trust. That can be hard, but speaking up about a problem is what helping a friend is all about.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
And welcome to this week's edition of Ebony Spectrum. We got several things here for you this week. First of all, we want to congratulate all those who won in the elections here in Pennsylvania yesterday. All those different representatives running for county executive here in Allegheny County, and also for those running for judgeships and a couple other things. So we'll see what happens in September. So congratulations to all those folks that that won yesterday. And I believe we have some more commentary coming up on that from Rick. And we got something on reparations also. But first up, we got our good friend Lene, and she has a special guest. So stay tuned to that.
Hey y'all, what's up? It's Saturday, so I'm gonna keep it black.
But I'm gonna keep it brief.
I'm sorry. What?
Well, hi, Lene. How are you?
Madam Vice President, what are you doing in my parking lot?
Well, this is actually an undisclosed location, but I am here to talk with you.
Right, right. Secret Service. Well, I'm here to talk about gun violence. Again.
Let's get into it.
Last Wednesday in Atlanta, Georgia, 24-year-old Deion Patterson walked into the waiting room of Northside Medical Center around lunchtime and opened fire with a semi-automatic handgun, killing one woman and wounding four others. And I'd really love to talk about something else. I really would. But this shooting actually happened just two blocks away from me while my man was outside walking a dog. And it seems like more and more communities are going to have to be touched by gun violence for the call to action to be loud enough for some type of meaningful legislation to happen. Inquiring minds want to know, why doesn't there seem to be any talk of an executive order?
Well, actually, the president signed an executive order in March.
What? That wasn't in my notes.
Yes, and that's not all. President Biden and I believe that all people in all communities deserve to be safe, and that is why President Biden signed the most significant gun reform legislation in nearly 30 years. And then he took executive action. President Biden signed an executive order that strengthens background checks, keeps guns out of dangerous hands, and cracks down on gun dealers who break the law. These are important steps, but there is so much more to do.
So you two have done what's in your power, and now we're waiting on Congress?
Exactly. Congress must have the courage to act and keep Americans safe.
Thank you for the clarification. And it's interesting, seeing as some members of Congress seem to be currently occupied with bills about CRT, anti-trans legislation, anti-abortion legislation, and now attempts to mandate that the Ten Commandments be displayed in K-12 classrooms. But I digress. Ooh. Now, the attack itself only lasted about 2 minutes, but one, the people there and their families will be affected for a lifetime. And two, everyone in the surrounding buildings and areas had to shelter in place for hours because they could not locate the shooter. Patterson was able to cross the street, carjack a truck, and subsequently lead multiple police departments on an 8-hour manhunt. And all this may seem like an extremely audacious scenario, one that would come straight out of a scene of Donald Glover's Atlanta. But this is what happens again when guns are so easily accessible and when background checks do not adequately screen gun buyers.
The policy changes we need are really pretty straightforward. We need background checks. We need red flag laws. Because here's the thing, you might want to know before someone buys a gun whether they have been found by a court to be a danger to themselves or others. You just might want to know. I think it's reasonable. And by the way, most gun owners agree. Even the majority of Americans support background checks for all gun purchases.
Repeatedly, we see that some mass shooters often suffer from or have had a history of mental illness. So how is it that we live in a country where someone who's experiencing a mental health crisis has an easier time getting their hands on an automatic weapon than the care and the help that they need?
It's pretty straightforward. There are not enough leaders in state houses and in the United States Congress who have the courage to fight for the safety of our children. If they did, they would pass these common sense gun safety laws.
For the safety of our children is correct. And I don't know if y'all know this, but part of our vice president's job is to physically travel across the country as one of our nation's leaders. So she was here in Atlanta after the shooting in the massage parlor in 2021, in Chicago last year after the shooting in Highland Park, in Buffalo, New York, when we lost some of our black elders in that grocery store, and then in Nashville to stand in solidarity with the Tennessee Three. And she wasn't just offering condolences, but stressing the fact that we do not have to live like this and making it plain that we will not be silencing this effort to ban assault weapons.
Let us reject the false choice that you're either in favor of the Second Amendment or you want reasonable gun safety laws. We can and we must do both.
Tell the truth, shame the devil.
We need leaders to join President Biden and me and step up and protect our children.
Because how are you going to be a leader when all you're doing is following?
Great question.
We have had 210 mass shootings this year so far. 210. And I realized, to Americans, these numbers probably don't even sound crazy anymore. So let me break it down for you a little bit. In each of the last 3 years, America has surpassed over 600 mass shootings. Not just gun deaths, not just gun-related incidents, but mass shootings. 610 in 2020, 690 in 2021, and 647 in 2022. And that's just about two a day on average. And I'm tired of preaching to the choir, so yeah, y'all have signed the first gun safety legislation in 30 years and an executive order. But if one side of Congress seems to be twiddling their thumbs, the question is, what are we voting for at this point?
You've seen the stats. Gun violence is now the number one cause of death of our children in this nation. And one in five Americans has lost a family member due to gun violence. And you know, while all this violence impacts communities in devastating ways, we know it does not do so equally. Black people are only 13% of America's population, but more than 60% of homicide victims from gun violence.
Well said, Madam Vice President. It's time to get back to work. And I think we're gonna need some more tea.
More tea.
And more tea is exactly what you're going to get in our very special episode of The Let Out featuring Madam Vice President Kamala Harris.
And thank you, Lene, and Vice President Harris. Next up, we have something from The Advocate.
Welcome to AC247. I'm Aaron Dean. Police say at least three people are dead and nine injured, including two police officers, in the nation's latest mass shooting. It happened in Farmington, New Mexico, and investigators say both officers are in stable condition at a local hospital, with the 18-year-old suspect dead. As the Advocate Channel's Emily Schmidt reports, the shooting happened on the same day Washington highlighted the dangers police can face on the job.
The images and information from Farmington, New Mexico, immediately put another community on edge.
We are actively looking at several blocks of this crime scene to determine what actually happened while we were responding to this scene. Because of the numerous phone calls that we did receive, we are trying to gather a lot of information that came in very rapidly.
Farmington's deputy police chief says the shooter was 18 years old. And before he was shot and killed by officers, both a city and a state police officer were injured. The tragedy prompted statements from the governor, who said she would not stop fighting against gun violence. In Washington, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland delivered the keynote address at the National Peace Officers Memorial Service, honoring fallen officers like U.S. Capitol Police Officer Howard Liebengood, who defended the Capitol on January 6, 2021.
Tragically, within days of the attack, Officer Liebengood died by suicide.
Brave police officers have faced down an historic wave of violent crime from the front lines. Even as defund the police, radicalism forced them to do it with fewer resources and thinner ranks.
Monday, the Senate Minority Leader touted a proposed bill that would toughen sentencing for assaulting or killing officers. On a day the dangers they face were all too clear. I'm Emily Schmidt reporting.
More Black people died than expected in 2020, reversing years of progress in reducing the mortality rate group. Researchers looked at data spanning 20 years. They found the death rate disparity had been declining until COVID-19 hit. Researchers say middle-aged Black Americans and infants had the highest rate of potential years of life lost. Disparities in deaths from heart disease was the largest driver of differences. One of the lead researchers says that there is no biological reason why Black people should have a higher mortality rate than white people, and that new ideas are needed to make healthcare more equitable. The study is published in the journal JAMA Network Open.
Thank you, Advocate. And next we have our man, Roland Martin. After Roland, we're going to hear from the Black World Media Network with an update on books that you need to get and something on reparations.
Yesterday, you saw how I had to sit here and just destroy Harris Faulkner, and the rest of those fools and outnumbered who straight up lied about President Joe Biden's speech to Howard University at the commencement on Saturday. And it clearly it seems that after his speech, it really pissed off the entire Fox ecosystem, which means that they sent out the talking points, attack Biden on him attacking white supremacy. That's typically what happens when you see all the Fox shows repeating the same talking points. So Fox and Friends, the day after, you have Rachel Campos Duffy, Peter Hegseth, and Will Cain. They were talking about his speech, and listen to the sheer hatred and stupidity that comes out of these fools' mouths.
Diversity. He didn't talk about the border. He didn't talk about the threat of the Chinese Communist Party. He didn't even talk about the threat of Islamic terrorism. Instead, he said the biggest threat to our country is, in fact, the threat of white supremacy.
Why? That's right, he said.
Stop right there, okay? So, Will Cain, who I repeatedly destroyed when I was at CNN, he decided, Biden didn't talk about this or this or this. The biggest threat is white supremacy. All right? So, okay. I want y'all to remember that particular point because I'm going to play a law enforcement expert who literally called that the greatest threat. So just we gonna get to that in a second, but just play more of the Fox News stupidity of Will Cain, Rachel, and Peter Hegseth.
That meanwhile, a record number of actual terrorists, as you talked about, Will, suspects have been coming across our border. Take a look at this list here. So we have in October through March, in 2022 alone, 98 people. Look at the increase.
Look at the one in the bottom right. That's 4 years combined. 8 total on the terror watch list encountered. These are the encounters, by the way, not the gotaways.
Exactly.
So far, 168. It's just listening to that speech, so divisive, so cynical. It plays into the conversation they want to be having about MAGA Republicans and threats to democracy. It's not grounded in actual threats, or at least ones that I just look at it and I go, this is where we're at. And it's so
freeze. Stop.
It's not true.
Now, I want you to understand, this conversation was actually held on the 1 year anniversary of the shooting in Buffalo where 10 black people were gunned down by a white supremacist, by a racist. No mention of that. And then you see look at that bottom right number. Look at the number. There were more white domestic terrorists on January 6, 2021 than they claimed that's crossing the border. Oh, and then you heard him. Well, they would have blamed MAGA. Yeah. And then on the exact same day that they were complaining about Biden's speech, you had hundreds of racist patriot folks, the patriot right, marching in Washington, D.C. Literally, they were marching in Washington, D.C. Oh, I guess Fox News didn't get the memo or the email about that racist march. Okay, more of the stupidity.
Believe it to be true.
Yeah.
That's right.
If he believed it to be true, we'd be talking about a level of incompetency that would be unmatched in the Oval Office, in the White House. If it were to be true, we'd be looking at a president that is totally ignorant of the threat of the Chinese Communist Party, Islamic terrorism, terrorists coming through the southern border. We would be looking at a president so frivolous and ignorant that it would represent in and of itself a national security threat. Yeah.
The sheer ignorance, the incompetence, the stupidity is you, Will Cain, is you, Rachel Campos Duffy, is you, Peter Hegseth, when the three of you combined don't even have the IQ to match Joe Biden. You three are sheer idiots. But we haven't gotten to the good stuff just yet. Press play.
But it's not true. And he doesn't believe it's true. It's a pander. And it is a naked and shameless and and embarrassing pander that he has to.
All right. Will Kane just said it's not true. I want y'all to put a pin in that video right there. And I want y'all to right now play. Here's the video of the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Christopher Wray, speaking about white domestic terrorism and the threat to the homeland.
We're also keeping our eye on domestic terrorism from people who've come up with their own customized belief systems and hope to advance them through violence.
We have, through the third quarter of this fiscal year, had about, give or take, 100 arrests in the international terrorism side, which includes the homegrown violent extremism.
This year.
But we've also had just about the same number, again, don't quote me to the exact digit, on the domestic terrorism side. And I will say that a majority of the domestic terrorism cases that we've investigated are motivated by some version of what you might call white supremacist violence, but it includes other things as well.
A huge chunk of those domestic terrorism investigations involve racially motivated, violent extremist motivated terrorist attacks. And the majority of those, of the racially motivated violent extremist attacks, are fueled by some kind of white supremacy. And I would say that the most lethal activity over the last few years has been committed by those type of attackers.
It used to be that some angry, demented guy living in mom's basement, not that there's anything wrong with that, in one part of the country is now able to communicate with a similarly angry guy in grandma's attic in another part of the country, and they get each other spun up now. And how to separate who's being aspirational versus who's being intentional. It won't shock you to learn, and hopefully not other members of the committee, that the amount of angry, hateful, unspeakable, combative, violent even rhetoric on social media exceeds what anybody in their worst imagination is out there. Terrorism moves at the speed of social media, and you have the ability of lone actors disgruntled in one part of the country to spin up similar like-minded individuals in other parts of the country and urge them into action.
Here we have the head of the FBI laying out the sheer threat of white domestic terrorism. Go to my iPad. This here's the New York Times. Top law enforcement officials say the biggest domestic terror threat comes from white supremacists. Who says that? The Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. It's his job to actually know these very threats. Last year, a former head of the Department of Homeland Security's intelligence branch filed a whistleblower complaint in which he accused the department of blocking a report about the threat of violent extremism and described white supremacists as having been exceptionally lethal in the abhorrent target attacks in recent years. Who was the president the previous year? The president the previous year was Donald Trump. The same Donald Trump who welcomed those white supremacists on January 6th. But on Fox News, oh no, Biden's the problem. They say Biden's lying, Biden's incompetent. The same Biden who spoke about the threat of white supremacy in his State of the Union address this year, in his address to Congress, the joint session when he first got there. This ain't new. Ain't the first time he said it. But you gotta understand, the white nationalist audience, they watch Fox News. That's why Fox is so angry at Biden because of this. Now, let's go back, because I have not played yet the best of the sheer stupidity of what we heard on Fox News. Press play.
he has to put a punctuation mark of, and I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting here at HBCU. Yes, you are. And you know what we could do? We could roll the tape of Joe Biden throughout his career as a politician and all of the racist statements that he has made. Look, there. Not subject.
Again, Will Cain said he's only saying it because he said at HBCU. Will Cain, you are an absolute liar. I exposed Harris Faulkner and her lies yesterday. He said it in the State of the Union. He said it in his first joint session of Congress. He said it in a summit at the White House. He said it in 2019 when he was running against Trump. You are in when he was speaking in Iowa, 86.6% white in that particular town. You were lying. But you weren't bright when you were at CNN, which is why I was easily debating you. And so you absolutely are with the cast of dummies now at Fox News, people who clearly don't know how to use Google. Press play.
Objectively racist statements he has made throughout his career and say, this is your knight in shining armor. This is your man to take down white supremacy. He's pandering. And if it can't be seen, you're blind.
Well, it's also it's a political strategy. And we had on someone, this guy named Gene from America First Legal, who uncovered that our, you know, federal law enforcement is actually going after these supposed white supremacists. And they had these ridiculous, comical profiles of pro-life moms and, you know, conservative dads, you know, in rural America. And meanwhile, we have this list of 168 terrorists coming across our border in just the last few months. So, you know, that's crazy. But it's actually, it's so, I'm going to just say it. I think it's evil. It's evil to take a country as good as ours, a country that really, if you look at people's everyday interactions with people of other races and cultures here in America, they're by and large, 99.9% peaceful, loving people want to live in America the way Martin Luther King had it, where we don't see color, we look at people's character. That's who we are. And yet he, for political gain, because he has failed so much as a president and taken our country so down, he understands the only way he could win is to convince some pretty dumb college kids at that university, if they believe him.
Well, what a disservice. It's
a disservice. If they believe that this country is full of white supremacists and that's our number one threat. But look, you saw in 2020, Pete, during those riots, a lot of people can be convinced that this is a racist country.
That's being taught at universities across America. So that statement is not surprising to the ears of those kids or to the ears of most college kids across America. They've been programmed to believe that is true, most of which have never left the country, never seen real. You want to see real racism? Travel the world. Yes. Travel the world outside of our borders. We have our sins of our past and things we've had to get through in this country. There's no doubt. But man, when you look at the way Americans live together in everyday life, ignoring the issue of race, it's a special thing. And they're trying to ruin that.
Cynical. No question about it.
You got three ignorant, incompetent white people at Fox News actually trying to tell black people, especially 4,000 black students at Howard University, that she called Howard graduates dumb. Let me explain something to you, dumbass Rachel Campos Duffy. My niece graduated summa cum laude from Howard with a degree in architecture and is getting her master's next year. I was there. You, Rachel, can kiss my ass. Will Cain, you can kiss my ass. And you know better, Will. And Peter Hegseth. And then Peter, you go, oh. Then you question whether these black students have passports, whether they travel the world. You three dumbasses haven't even traveled black America. I dare you, Peter Hegseth and Rachel Campos Duffy and Will Cain, I dare you to visit Howard University. They don't know racism when those students were subjected to bomb threats Today, Jackson State University was closed down because of a bomb threat. Numerous HBCUs across America endured bomb threats, and you three assholes have the audacity to say they know nothing about racism?
Well, we leave it up to Mr. Roland Martin to take folks to task. Excuse the language used by him. I can't really apologize for what he says, but Roland Martin goes off on the CNN folks. No, actually the Fox folks talking about President Biden giving a speech at the Howard University commencement exercises last weekend. Wow.
I'm recording tonight while protesters at Seton Hall University, my alma mater and current place of employment as an adjunct professor in Africana Studies Department, where the students are protesting. They've been protesting now for several days, taking over the administration building, demanding a more solid foundation for Africana Studies. So as I recall, the State of the Black World Conference that just concluded in Baltimore, thoughts about struggle have not left my mind. So I'm going to share a couple of thoughts, and that'll be this week's commentary. One, I wanted to congratulate one of the award recipients at the State of the Black World Conference, one Paul Coates. Paul Coates, I'm proud to say, is one of my publishers. I was co-editor with Dr. Jared Ball of an anthology of scholarship about correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X. In fact, the book was called A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X, and I was proud to have Paul.
On the Black World Media Network, this is Book Bundle, a review of literary works in varying media formats. Here is the reviewer, Professor Todd Stephen Burroughs.
I'm recording tonight while protesters at Seton Hall University, my alma mater and current place of employment as an adjunct professor in Africana Studies Department, where the students are protesting. They've been protesting now for several days, taking over the administration building, demanding a more solid foundation for Africana Studies. So as I recall, the State of the Black World Conference that just concluded in Baltimore, thoughts about struggle have not left my mind. So I'm going to share a couple of thoughts, and that'll be this week's commentary. One, I wanted to congratulate one of the award recipients at the State of the Black World Conference, one Paul Coates. Paul Coates, I'm proud to say, is one of my publishers. I was co-editor with Dr. Jared Ball of an anthology of scholarship about correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X. In fact, the book was called A Lie of Reinvention, Correcting Manning Marable's Malcolm X, and I was proud to have Paul Coates as the publisher of that book, so I wanted to first congratulate him. The second thing that I'm thinking about in terms of struggle is it was rumored all day that Ras Baraka, the mayor of Newark and the son of left activists, black left activists, Amiri Baraka and Amina Baraka, was going to show up today in South Orange and kind of cheer the students on. And it made me think about how 30 years ago he was a student involved in a protest taking over a building. And so I wanted to mention that book. The book is called We Are Worth Fighting For, A History of the Howard University Student Protest of 1989. And the author is Joshua Myers, a great young black historian. And he documents the entire struggle where they took over a building at Howard. And it took Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry to step in before Howard University was going to let the cops roll over those students. And that included not only a young Ras Baraka, but that also included a young April Silver. April Silver, who's now known as a great PR woman who represents a lot of the stars of my generation, star writers and artists of my particular generation. I'm Generation X / hip hop generation. So in thinking about the students and thinking about Baraka, I just wanted to plug for that book, We Are Worth Fighting For, A History of the Howard University Student Protest of 1989. And now, my third thought is about a man that I only just found out about because I saw something in LinkedIn about his memoir being available. I think it's self-published. And that memoir is called The Damn Don't Cry, Pages from the Life of a Black Prisoner and Organizer. The author of that book is a person I've never heard of, Frank Edgar Chapman Jr. Frank Edgar Chapman Jr. So let me read what a couple of articles say about him. The People's World says Frank Chapman has a long and storied reputation as an activist, leader, theoretician in the anti-repression, labor, and left movements. His history makes it imperative that activists engage with his theoretical work, which is drawn from years of struggle in the mass movement. His latest book, this is before his memoir, Marxist-Leninist Perspectives on Black Liberation and Socialism, traces the history of the developments and interconnections between the struggle for socialism and the African-American freedom movement. Fightback News says the following about his memoir. There's a specific section of society which needs this book, those in prison. Chapman relates how becoming a communist led him not into his frustration, but out of it. The book belongs in the genre with the autobiography of Malcolm X and George Jackson's Soledad Brother as a work that needs to get inside the prisons, because the meat of Chapman's book is his politicization while in prison from 1961 to 1975. That's definitely a life of struggle, and those are the things that are floating around my head. And for Book Bundle, I'm Todd Stephen Burroughs.
That was Book Bundle, a review of literary works in varying media formats, presented by reviewer, Professor Todd Stephen Burroughs, journalist, historian, and popular culture enthusiast.
From the Black World Media Network, this is a reparations update.
Baltimore City is one step closer to creating a reparations commission that would distribute funds to communities subjected to high levels of drug enforcement over the last two decades. The bill, sponsored by City Council President Nick Mosby, aims to follow up on a cannabis reform law passed by the Maryland General Assembly in 2022. That legislation implemented a community reinvestment and repair fund generated from fees and taxes paid by state licensed cannabis retailers. Funds associated with it are prohibited by law from going to law enforcement. Instead, they must go towards community BASID initiatives benefiting low-income residents and those disproportionately harmed by the cannabis prohibition and enforcement. The fund is operated by the state comptroller, who distributes the money to local jurisdictions based on the number of past cannabis arrests made there.
Keep listening to the Black World Media Network for reparations updates daily. From the Black World Media Network, this is a reparations update.
Kansas City Mayor Quinton Lucas has appointed 13 people to serve on a commission that studies the process of paying reparations for slavery and segregation. The Kansas City Council voted in January to form the commission. Councilwoman Melissa Robinson, who helped lead the effort, said the commission would take time to determine how Kansas City has participated in the disenfranchisement of African Americans and what repair looks like. Among those appointed to the Kansas City Mayor's Commission on Reparations are nonprofit leaders, economists, educators, journalists, doctors, and community and reparations activists. Supporters have suggested the commission could create a historical document showing the city's involvement in discriminatory law and issue a formal apology on behalf of Kansas City.
Keep listening to the Black World Media Network for reparations updates daily.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone, thanks for listening. And be sure to check out Ebony Spectrum next Wednesday. Thank you.
Hey there. You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your radio, WRCT.org on your web browser. It is 7 o'clock. That means it is time for the radio calendar. Here are some things going on in Pittsburgh. Resident cinephiles and francophiles can get their fix of heists, capers, dramas, and commentary because the Harris Theater will be screening The Five Devils and The Innocent now through May 18th. Screenings are held at the Harris Theater at 809 Liberty Avenue in downtown Pittsburgh. For more information, visit trustarts.org. The playfully provocative Lucy Darling is just one character in the arsenal of performer Carissa Hendricks. Her philosophy, her mastery over both subtle slights and powerful visual magic has made Lucy the most beloved character in stand-up magic. Indulgence, featuring Lucy Darling, is presented now until June 11th. All performances are at 811 Liberty Avenue, again, in downtown Pittsburgh. For more information, again, trustarts.org. The 64th annual Dollar Bank Three Rivers Arts Festival brings a diverse lineup of performing and visual art attractions to a new location in the heart of Pittsburgh's downtown cultural district. The community festival welcomes hundreds of artists from throughout the region and around the globe for 10 days of live music, dance, theater, gallery exhibitions, public art, creative activities, and the artist's market, free and open for everyone. The full lineup is available at trustarts.org/TRAF.
Blessed is the lotus, the day's bleeding wound.
That's Janaka Stuckey in the background.
Blessed are the spiders, their alphabet. 26 stones, my corpse is dancing.
Soon to be in the foreground as soon as I wrap this stuff up. You can stop by the Pittsburgh Banjo Club's regular rehearsal every Wednesday at 8 p.m. to enjoy their wonderful music, have a drink, and perhaps eat something. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and 1930s. The Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge, number 339, which is at 400 Cedar Avenue in Pittsburgh's North Side. Reservations must be made by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. Do that by calling them at 412-321-1834.
The island, all the world, a promontory scab hardening around the earth's myriad molten wounds.
Moving on to the concert calendar tonight, Creator and Sepultura and Death Angel and Spirit World will all be at the Roxian. Theoretically, that started at 5:30, so hopefully they're working on rock time if you aren't there already. McKinley James will be at the Club Cafe along with Matt King and the Dukes of St. Clair. The O'Reilly Theater is hosting Dan Wilson with Nigel Hall, Jennifer Hartswick, Nicole Zoraitis. Sorry, Nicole. My lips are dumb. Darrell LeGrare. It's for a Stevie Wonder tribute show. Tomorrow night, Cloakroom will be at the Roboto Project along with VYLTS and Blinder. Angela Pearly will be at the Club Cafe with Eric Vincent Huey. Hamill on Trial will be at the Funhouse at Mr. Smalls. And Heartless Bastards will be at Thunderbird, along with Regal Suite. On Friday, Trophy Eyes will be at Preserving